Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show, 12 August 2014. It's Tuesday. Thank you for joining us, caring about your world and taking a different perspective. That's what we do at the Power Hour. It's not about what's on television. It's not about what we think. It's about what we can find. Because you know what? Facts are facts. That's all there is to it. Facts are facts. And we do appreciate your joining us here today. JD and I are in the studio today to help you walk through all of this. Some of it's not very pretty. And of course, having to announce that Robin Williams has died of an apparent suicide is just tragic.
Yes.
Absolutely tragic. I mean, a man who could make so many people laugh is now causing them to cry. And I just cannot imagine how his family and his children, his wife and three children must feel as a result of this. But I saw a sign at the Laugh Factory in California, in L.A., and it said, go make God laugh.
Right.
I thought that was pretty cool. Yeah. It's all about living your life every single day, ladies and gentlemen, doing the best you can every single moment. And it's, you know, listening to some of the people on TV, and I don't want to belabor this, but they're all saying he just didn't get enough psychiatric help. Somehow, that to me is not the answer. Somehow, I wonder, what was he taking?
Mm-hmm.
What was he on, and what kind of effects were they having upon him? But that's my own question from years of looking at the issues of these drugs. Anyway, moving on to other issues, given the fact, though, that the news has been 24-7, almost, well, it was 24 hours. It seemed like every single station, except, you know, DIY, I think, turned over to the suicide of Robin Williams, which tells you right there, news... Is it really news if all of a sudden the death of a comedian is going to literally wipe it off the face of what you're watching on TV? I mean, I think that's important to look at it and realize that news is really what they want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, you talk about news. JD and I are going to get into this issue of the humanitarian rescue of a bunch of people in Iraq. I don't know what to say.
I don't even know where to start.
I know. I mean, this is the weakest looking humanitarian rescue I've ever seen. And it verges on being a little bit dangerous, too, to a lot of people.
It's like the worst B movie I've ever seen.
I know.
That's the impression of it that I get when I watch it on TV.
We're going to tell you why.
Yeah.
We'll tell you why, because he pointed out some things to me that just, oh, my goodness. Ebola vaccine. Now, don't forget, we still have a problem with Ebola. They're saying now that they've used up all their Ebola vaccine.
Yep.
Hey, smart guys,
right.
Why don't you bring a bunch of people back here and then say, well, we only had three doses of it, and now, too bad, so sad. Mm-hmm. Really? Does anybody start to smell something here that is not right? And the Ebola vaccine, they say, is going to be manufactured by a criminal drug company with a felony record. I want you to hear about their felony record they have. Or seriously, about what they've done.
I'm just wondering if there are any pharmaceutical companies out there that don't have a few felony records kind of hidden under the mat.
If they don't, they should.
That's right, you know?
Yeah.
Seems like that's par for the course.
It is. Yeah. But wait till you hear what Merck has done and what GlaxoSmithKline have done. The things they committed and are still big time pharmaceutical companies, it is really beyond what you would even imagine. I mean, any of us would have done 1/100th of what happened here, and yet they're okay. Monsanto got a bit of a fine. And I couldn't be happier.
Hmm.
But you know what happens is we hear about these fines and then we don't hear about how they contested the fine and they won later on.
Oh, yeah. There's always like an 8-year appeal process. And
yeah.
No one ever goes to jail. No one who's ever responsible for making those decisions ever actually does anything. So it's all just funny money at that
point. Corporate entities are people.
Right.
Except when it comes to what they did wrong. What you got for us today?
Well, we've got more stupidity at the IRS, and unfortunately, the stupidity is spreading to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. We need to talk about the situation that's erupted in St. Louis, this Ferguson, the riots that happened last night. And we'll come back with some financial news and good guests today. It's going to be a busy show.
Thank you for joining us. We'll be back after this 3-minute break. This is Joyce.
And JD.
Stay tuned. Welcome back to Power Hour. Thank you for joining us, caring about your world. Wanting to be able to teach others about what is really going on, not the proposed or the accepted propaganda that you're seeing on television. It is all that. I don't care if it's financial news. I don't care if it is local news. I don't care if it is national news. It is all about the agenda.
Yeah, if they're not telling you something that you probably don't want to hear, then you're just watching public relations. That's really all it is.
Yes. And right now, I see one of the biggest issues, what's taking place in Iraq. Now, remember that this is the fourth administration to bomb Iraq. Now, really, are we so inept as a military that we could not have taken this country over had it been our desire? Of course we could have. Remember back in the first Gulf War in 1991 when they told all the snipers to stand down and not shoot Saddam Hussein? We're going to need him for later, was the message. Mm-hmm. And they sure did. This is a plan, a very, very long plan.
I'm starting to wonder if maybe dropping bombs isn't a path to achieving peace. I'm just starting to wonder if this is fourth consecutive, you know, time we've gone into Iraq and dropped bombs, and there still doesn't seem to be a bunch of peace just erupting in that area.
Well, we know they believe that. And we know they believe that the more bombs you drop, the more peace you have. Mm-hmm. And of course, it doesn't ever quite work out that way.
Doesn't seem to.
Mm-hmm. Not at all. And yet, more people die, and that seems to be by design also. But this idea of the humanitarian rescue of these Christians, first of all, they are not what you would consider Christians, or at least, you know, our Christians would not consider them Christians, I guarantee you.
No.
There's no mention of the Messiah. I mean, we're supporting Israel, first of all, who doesn't really support the Messiah all that much, as you all know.
Right.
And we're supporting them over the 20% Christians in Palestine and in Gaza. And that's still... It puts the United States at the height of hypocrisy because we're supposed to be caring about these people over on a mountain and their children, put them, save them, get them water, but not the children in Gaza? What is wrong with them?
Kind of a double standard.
Well, they realize it too, and they've been starting to try and undo the damage they have done by ignoring the people in Gaza, by saying, well, you know, we've done everything we can, and we're sending in this, and we're sending in people to work on their power structure now, and we're trying to, really, that place is an absolute mess now.
Oh, it's so bad looking. On the ground, the scenes from on the ground, like watching these poor people coming back to their homes after being, you know, completely cast out for a while, boy, it's just like, it's like sitting on a pile of rubble. It's watching these people sitting on a pile of rubble at this point.
But you know what they're doing is they're trying to say, look how happy the children are today. They're out there because there's no fighting. There's a 72-hour truce, and look, they are just, but life is back to normal.
Yeah.
Are you on the pile of rubble?
Jeez, and these poor kids are probably excited because they're, you know, getting to count on one hand the number of their friends that are still alive.
Yeah.
You know, if you've been hunkered down in a cave for three or four weeks, and then all of a sudden you get a chance to go out in the sunshine, you're going to be pretty excited too, you know.
And this morning, prior to the show, we saw on CNN a helicopter that is, it looks like it's around maybe 2,000, 5,000 feet up in the air. I mean, they're way up in the air. There's a little tiny postage stamp lands down below.
Yes.
And what was in the helicopter?
Well, a lot of things were in this helicopter. We're talking about what I consider to be pretty much B-rated footage that we're gathering now. But there was a CNN reporter in the helicopter.
Number one.
That's a pretty big telling detail. Kids that were seemed to have pretty clean clothes on, seemed to be pretty well, you know, kept in terms of haircuts and things like that. So there was the humanitarian aspect.
But
and
they were screaming.
They were screaming. Well, they were screaming because there's a guy at the edge of the helicopter. And again, Joyce is not kidding when he's saying this helicopter is at least 6,000 feet in the air. You can see the field outlines below, and he's standing there with 30 cal aimed almost straight down, just running through bullets. And it's just like, you're not hitting anybody with a 30 cal at that height. And what are you doing? You know, like, what are you doing?
It's just
you're going through the motions to put it on television
so you can
paint a picture, but that's all it is. It's just painting a picture. When they go to this mountaintop and they're dropping out these, you know, things, they're like Costco bundles of water, right? The cheap plastic bottles of water, and they're hucking them out of a helicopter at like 30 feet onto quote unquote a mountaintop desert, you know? So you're just like, you throw this stuff out, it's going to hit the rocks and explode. I mean, it's just pointless. It's pointless. You watch it and you're just like, you guys are just going through the motions just to have something on TV.
But picture this helicopter, though. All the doors are open, of course, on a helicopter, and they are firing this 30 cal, like you said, into the ground. Now, what are you hitting? Cows? Are you hitting people? Are you hitting good guys, bad guys? Are you hitting wedding celebrations?
Rice.
What are you hitting?
Yeah.
You don't know.
Mm-mm.
And they're shooting this, and these children are screaming in the helicopter. Hey, guess what? I'd be screaming also. The noise from a helicopter, it is so loud inside these uninsulated helicopters. Mm-hmm. They haven't given the children earplugs, which you always give people when they get on one of these aircraft. You always give them earplugs. And, yes, they do have earplugs. Mm-hmm. And they're little tiny little foamy things. And they're very inexpensive. And you hand them one of those, and when they get on the helicopter, but not these people, so that they would scream and yell. And they show these screaming children, because, well, I'd be screaming if there's a 30 cal in there shooting out also, with all that noise, plus all the helicopter noise, all the ambient noise. It's just crazy.
Plus, who knows what was going on the ground, because, you know, supposedly you're with your family, and you're on this mountaintop, and you're running from ISIS, and I don't believe that that's the case at all. So you've got this situation where you've got kids who are obviously bewildered, because they have no idea what's going on. There's people throwing mm-hmm. bales of water at them from a helicopter, and all of a sudden their family's bum-rushing them to get on the helicopter. I'd be completely disoriented.
Yes.
You know, you have no concept of what's going on. You don't even speak the language of the people in the helicopter who are sitting there shooting stuff around mm-hmm. you. I mean, it's chaos.
You don't know if he's going to turn the 30 cal on them.
Exactly.
I mean, and the reporter is screaming in the back, see, these children are screaming and crying. And it was horrible.
Yeah.
It was just horrible.
I have to say, too, the editing on the staff of the CNN, the one that I saw, was the worst. And what really gave it away to me was that there was a scene where they were going to pull all this this belt of bullets out of the 30 cal. They've got kind of like a center console on the helicopter, and they open up the latch, and they were going to pull these bullets out. Well, the way that the scene played out on the TV, there was actually like a second pause kind of right before they pulled these bullets out. So, like, everybody was kind of in a position, and then they said, roll it. And then they kind of waited, and then they started pulling these bullets out. It was like, you're not capturing something that's actually happening. You're capturing something that was obviously set up, and poorly set up, and poorly executed. So,
I mean, no CNN helicopter, no CNN reporter is going to be up in a helicopter like that in an area that's dangerous. I mean, they're not going to risk them. And but these children looked like they were just staged in that. Anyway, enough said for
agree.
That.
Yep.
Enough said for that. This whole thing of we've got to go and get those Christians. We got to go and get those. They are not Christians. They are not Christians. But you have been so manipulated to believe that it's okay in Gaza to let those people go and don't worry about them. They'll be just fine. Besides, they don't deserve any better than that. I'm serious. That's what they're essentially saying. And they're letting them go. We're not doing any humanitarian aid to Gaza.
Mm-mm.
And the U.S. is supposed to be so concerned about humanitarianism. We're supposed to be so concerned about the reality of what they're going through. That's not happening, ladies and gentlemen. It's not happening. And then the other thing that you look at is the idea they've gotten you to care about these people who are nowhere near Christians, but you're supporting them. They can manipulate you into anything they want you to believe. And now they're saying U.S. Marines highly likely in the ground in Iraq. It's highly likely that the U.S. Special Forces are already operating on Iraqi soil, despite claims by U.S. officials. It is highly likely that U.S. Special Forces are already on the ground. Really? Well, we know they are, because they have to have them on the ground if they're doing all these operations. They go in first with those people, and then they do their operations. Highly likely. How many more military lives need to be sacrificed over there? I don't care what military they're from. I don't care if they're Iraq military, U.S. military, British military. I don't care who they are. Russian humanitarianism convoy departs to East Ukraine. Almost 300 trucks carrying 2,000 tons of humanitarian aid have been sent towards the border from Ukraine, Moscow, regional authorities say. Earlier, Russia and Ukraine agreed on a humanitarian mission under the authority of the Red Cross. And it looks like they are upping the ante for the war in Ukraine, without a doubt. They want this war, and they're getting this war. It's looking like it's getting, and at the same time, they're saying Ukraine says 45,000 Russian troops on the border with tanks, missiles, warplanes, and attack helicopters. And just the usual warmongering sound bites, because someone clearly is on a mission to escalate the cross-border hostilities into all-out war, without a doubt.
Okay, so this story put off a major warning bell or alarm system in my head last night when I was reading it, because does Russia is they have TV, right, in Russia? They have CNN and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Okay, just making sure. I don't know. So they know we have drones, right? Mm-hmm. They know that NATO is droned to the max, and that's pretty much how we're going to fight a war. Why would you then take a bunch of what I would consider to be drone targets and put them on a border where we know that they are. Does Russia not have drones? I would think Russia would be pretty far ahead of us because they were smart enough to outlaw the microwave back in the 1970s, before any of us knew what was going on. So I don't believe any of that. I believe that they are probably mounting a humanitarian effort on the because of reasons that we've talked about before. But why would you, again, put a big stack of drone targets out there just for the sake of doing it? And does Russia not have a drone system, as accurate and as, as big as ours? I can't imagine that they wouldn't. So.
And I have seen no pictures of 45,000 people amassed on the border.
Right.
So, we're kept being kept in this cocoon here of wanting us to think that we got to go to war with Russia because it's getting worse and worse and worse. And then with Iraq, the phony stories coming out of Iraq, which are an excuse for us to go and bomb Iraq. So as you're watching the getting ready for the war to explode in who knows where, there was an article that Brandon Turbinville did about the real reason that the U.S. is bombing Iraq. Let's go back to Iraq for a second, because he has really looked at this in a very fair fashion. The targeted strikes that are going on in Iraq in order to combat the Islamic State of the United States is following through with the threat to attack them. And this is all by design. When we come back, I want to tell you why we are at Erbil. Why we're at Erbil, ladies and gentlemen. This has been manufactured. Now, Ukraine, Russia, not so much in this fashion, but wait till you hear about why we're attacking Erbil. Stay tuned. We'll be back. 4 minute break. This is Joyce.
And JD.
Welcome back to Power Hour. Thank you for joining us. Caring about your world. The issue of why we are bombing Iraq again for the fourth administration should make you wonder what's really the purpose. Well, Brandon Turbinville, activist, posted an excellent article talking about is and, what is. And I love the fact that they are so kind to get a U.S. American acronym or English acronym to use for their name. It could be some, really difficult Arab name, but then that wouldn't resonate with the American people as much. And at least 2 weeks have been, it's been looking like they've been doing these bombings for 2 weeks now, airstrikes, or a week, and then the planning, of course, getting everybody over there and all ready, and then saying all of a sudden, oh, we got to do the airstrikes. One of the airstrikes apparently struck an IS mortar position and an IS convoy near Erbil. IS fighters had advanced to within a half hour's distance from Erbil, the capital of Iraq's Kurdish region. Now, according to a Pentagon spokesperson, two F-A-18s that took off from the aircraft carrier in the Gulf were involved in the airstrike. Now, we're talking 500-pound bomb airstrikes. We're talking about huge annihilate everything bomb strikes. These are not just targeted surgical strikes, which there is no such thing, ladies and gentlemen. There is no such thing. They may get it into an area, but you can't tell. We only killed bad guys. And that's what they want you to think. Anyway, Obama stated that the strikes were necessary to prevent genocide. Now, that's what we've been hearing. To prevent genocide, to protect Christians and other religious minorities whose lives are in danger. Yet we're the only ones over there killing people.
Mm-hmm.
We are the only ones over there. Now, you're supposed to believe that IS is, or used to be ISIS, or used to be ISIL. Now they evolve, periodically. The airstrikes are the first that have been authorized in Iraq by the United States since 2011. I repeat, these airstrikes are the first that have been authorized. Keyword, authorized. We've been doing airstrikes. We've been doing drone bombing over there. But these are the first that have been authorized. Now, what is notable are the circumstances surrounding the initiation of the bombing and what may have prompted the American military action. After allowing ISIS, entirely funded, directed, created, and armed by the West, notably the United States, to seize vast swaths of territory across Iraq. This is the important part of this whole thing. ISIS is entirely funded, directed, created, and armed by the West.
Uh-huh.
Don't forget that when you hear all of this stuff about how bad ISIS is. Who is ISIS? It is a creation of the United States government et al. And why bomb Iraq right now? The answers to this question surround Erbil, E-R-B-I-L, Erbil, the Kurdish region of Iraq. It is, are you ready for this, ladies and gentlemen, a hub for U.S. oil companies.
No.
Yes. I know you would find that surprising.
I'm shocked.
In fact, Erbil, a city of 1.5 million, is largely viewed as the administrative center for the Kurdish regional oil industry and a quarter of Iraq's oil production nationally. The oil reserves are so large in that region that Kurds often claim that if they were to break off from Iraq and establish their own country, the new nation would stand as the ninth largest oil producer in the world.
Wow. Yeah, yes. There's no motive there at all.
This is huge. Yeah. This is huge. And the Islamic State, if it were to take over Erbil, they would endanger Iraq's oil production and, by extension, global access to oil. Global access to oil. Prices would surge at a time when Europe, which buys oil from Iraq, has still not escaped the global recession. Oil prices have already risen in response to the Islamic State's threat to Erbil. And on Thursday, American oil companies Chevron and ExxonMobil began evacuating their personnel from Kurdistan. But oil traders are predicting that American intervention could halt the rise. In essence, we find U.S. airstrikes more bearish than bullish for oil, as the act finally draws the line for IS and reinforces both the stability in South Iraq and Kurdistan. The threat to oil production facilities posed by the IS was reported by a number of other media outlets, including the Wall Street Journal. It was not only American companies, however, that were concerned about the ability to continue production. British oil companies are beginning to evacuate as well. We've got a huge amount of people over there dealing with oil. Do you think they're going to take Erbil? Of course not. There's no way they're going to take Erbil or Baghdad. Baghdad is the headquarters for the United States military government over there, controlling every single thing that is taking place in Iraq, including the good guys and the bad guys.
This is like bringing it all into perspective for me, though, because now I can see really clearly, you know, the situation with Malachi. Okay, so he wasn't supporting the Kurds, right? The Kurds are kind of off on their own thing against ISIS right now. We created ISIS to create, you know, ferment in the area, but we can't allow them to take over Erbil. This is really big news.
Yeah, when we come back, we've got a lot more to this story also. And what does polio have to do with this? We'll tell you after this 3-minute break. Stay tuned. This is Joyce.
And JD.
It gets crazier. It really does. Get the duct tape.
Seriously.
33 minutes after the hour. Thank you for supporting the Power Mall. Thank you for purchasing from the Power Mall. That's how we stay on the air. And we bring you that old-fashioned kind of goodness, which is a good product for a good price. And then we give you a radio show to boot. So please stay with us and support us at the Power Mall. We're going to be talking about magnesium in the third hour today with... oh, man, forgot his name.
Martin Pitella.
Martin Pitella, thank you.
You're welcome.
It takes two people to do this radio show, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. Two minds. Carolyn Dean wrote a book called The Magnesium Miracle. If you've never read it, she will impress you upon the reasons why you must know about magnesium levels. Biggest reason for heart attacks. And probably the tome on this is Transdermal Magnesium Therapy by Dr. Mark Circus, that we have at the Power Mall. So please take advantage of getting that. And I wanted to tell you about a picnic coming up, a Constitution Celebration picnic I was asked to announce. It's September 13th, 11 a.m. to sunset. I like that, 11 a.m. to sunset. That sounds kind of old-fashioned-y. They're going to have a pig roast, speakers, live music, and children's activities, and Michael Badnarik will be the featured speaker. Remember him? He was a 2004 U.S. presidential candidate. And William Taylor Ryle, constitutional scholar, constitutional sheriff brigades, and oath keeper will be there, and it's going to be held at Brandy Springs Park. And the GPS coordinates are as follows. No, I'm not going to give them to you, but there are GPS coordinates if you'd like that at WPLF.net. WPLF.net says bring a dish to share. That's kind of cool.
That's way cool.
Big potluck, you know, for people that care. Also, remember Sheriff Mack's books at the Power Mall. Please take advantage of getting those and supporting the CSPOA. Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. All right, getting back to non-peace and Iraq, what we're looking at is an area of Kurdistan, which the United States wants desperately, and the United States wants to control desperately. That's why we're only saving only Christians that are not really Christians in Kurdistan. Don't you love it?
Just the people fast enough to catch the helicopter, really, is what it comes down to, unfortunately.
And dodge the water as it's being dropped out of the helicopter. But I think it's amazing. Can you imagine they're saying, okay, we got to have some, like, excuse here. Why are we just in Kurdistan? Why aren't we wherever ISIS is right now?
Exactly.
We got to figure that. Oh, Yazidis. Yazidis, that's it. We'll have the president mention Yazidis. Everybody will go to Wikipedia, look it up real quick, and they might. If they do that, they'll find out they're not really Christians, but that's okay. We'll deal with that later. So the president does that, then goes off to the links and goes off and plays golf. And so far he's gotten, I think, 3 airstrikes and 2 rounds of golf in.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Good job
for the
if
president.
You can get it, I guess. You know.
Yeah. Now, Brandon Turbeville did this article saying that the fact that Al-Qaeda, IS, is the other related terrorist organization, they're functioning as the CIA's Arab Legion. They're used to weaken and overthrow governments, as well as to act as a constant boogeyman for populations back home so that civil liberties and constitutional rights will be sacrificed willingly for the perception of security. And who was the congressman that guests kept yelling over and over again this weekend? They're coming to New York. They're coming to New York. We're going to have the IS group.
Lindsay?
What's yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that guy needs to be off TV forever.
Oh, man. I mean, for a lot of reasons. But
yeah.
Lindsey Graham is like the most repugnant. Well, no, there's a bunch of them in competition for most repugnant, I think, but he is one of the most repugnant.
Top five, yeah.
Yeah. And he keeps yelling, they're going to be in New York. They're going to, I will have told you so. Well, you know what? They're going to be in New York because they got to now because he told you they were going to be in
all
New
part
York.
Of the design.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And when these proxy armies begin to endanger the oil production or any other project of the world oligarchy, they are eliminated, and the threat that they pose is neutralized. And if the American people will wise up to this fact, one of the major tools used by the world oligarchy to terrorize the domestic population and the rest of the world will be yanked from their hands. When we realize ISIS is us, think about it. ISIS is U.S.
Yeah.
IS is U.S.
Mm-hmm.
That's what everybody ought to be saying. And now the Nouri al-Maliki, 2.0 reality show surrounding his leaving Iraq, he says, oh no, I'm not leaving. U.S. says, you're leaving. Guess what? He will leave.
Yeah.
He will leave. There will be no choice about that. But is he really digging his heels in and saying, I'm not leaving?
I don't think he's going to.
No.
I think what we're going to see is that, you know, Kurdistan's obviously going to be fractured off. But, and I think that's what all this airstrike is about, is that we're trying to interject our, you know, presence between the oil and the whoever the government of Kurdistan is going to be once Malachi either steps down or kind of allows that situation to happen. So I think that's what we're doing right now.
Yeah. Well, he looks like he's lost his job yesterday, but it didn't really happen.
Mm-hmm.
And after the country's president appointed a rival Shia candidate to form a new government in a bid to end the deadlock, well, it's going to be divided up into 3 countries, just like that article, Blood Border, said back in 2006. They predicted this. They've been working on it. It's all by design.
What I love about this now is that, you know, we keep talking about all of these issues. It seems like for the last 6 months, every issue that's come up has been kind of framed in a humanitarian type of way. You know, we've seen the kids at the border. We've seen the kidnapped people, the girls in Nigeria. But what was interesting is that at the very beginning, all they would do is present you with the situation. They would say, you know, there's Christians on a mountaintop and we need to rescue them. Or there's girls that have been kidnapped in Nigeria. Now they actually use the word humanitarian just for those kids who weren't quite catching up with the rest of the class and weren't picking it up quick enough. Now they're saying, we have a humanitarian crisis.
Yes.
And we need to address that, which to me is like, you know, as soon as they actually start using that word, boy, if you can't tell that that's agenda at that point.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It's just crazy.
And they even started using it over the weekend on, you know, all the head talking news. They did it.
Well,
also.
Now humanitarian, we've got to go give 6
Uh-oh.
Million kids.
Uh-oh.
Polio vaccinations.
No kidding. And then this is like the ultimate. Okay, we got our bombing people over here.
That's right. How much chaos.
We got our water feeding people over here, and we got our polio vaccination effort. Are you kidding me?
Oh, man.
UNICEF and the World Health Organization yesterday began a 4-day campaign. Now, how long did they have to have this in the works? How long, I ask you?
Well, considering all the Ebola stuff that's going on right now, trying to get UNICEF to do anything, I would imagine, would take more than an act of Congress.
Well, UNICEF began yesterday a 4-day campaign to try to vaccinate 4 million children for polio in Iraq.
I'm sorry, that's a million children a day.
You know, that's tough when it's war-torn and sieged area by ISIS. 4 million children. We are running around vaccinating. Are you serious?
Well, the threat of polio is very real because, you know, in the last 14 years, Joyce, they've had two, count them on one hand, two polio breakouts. Well, and by breakouts, I mean two people that have gotten polio in 14 years.
Last 14 years, so you take 365 times 14 years and two incidents of, that's really not even significant.
Can you imagine trying to vaccinate a million kids a day in a war zone over the next 4 days? The amount of
incoming.
Unbelievable. Oh. It's unbelievable. So there's obviously clearly some sort of agenda going on where we're trying to do something to these poor kids.
It's called what's in the vaccine.
Oh, unbelievable.
What's in the vaccine, ladies and gentlemen. And, you know, remember there were, you don't know, because years ago in about 1999, I talked with a physician who came over here from Uganda. And this man told me, he said, when we saw the vaccines coming in from UNICEF or from the United States, we were like danger red flag. Right. We knew they didn't care about us. And we knew we didn't want our people taking them. And he said, I started telling our people not to take those vaccines. Mm-hmm. He said, and then they started sending them UNICEF food on top of that. And we tested the food, and it was full of toxins. It was full of them. And he said, and we knew that the vaccines lowering the immune system, plus coupled with the food that had the fungus in it, that was going to kill off all of our people. And we told him to get out.
Wow.
And that was in 1996, 99 time frame. Mm-hmm. And would they stoop so low as to vaccinate these children with something that might cause them harm? Would they stoop so low? Well, I'm going to get to the story on the Ebola vaccine and the criminal element to that in just a second. But the answer to that, I think so. And is that agenda to get something in those 4 million little bodies? That's genocide right there, if you ask me.
It's unbelievable to me that they would even put a story out that they're going to attempt something like that. And again, just with the conditions on the ground right now, it's obscene. It's ridiculous to think that that's what they're doing.
Yeah. Memo to UNICEF. If you want to do this and get away with it, just don't tell everybody.
That's right.
Because there's going to be people like me going, you're doing what in a war zone? You're going to, come on, children, over here, bombing them. And I am just amazed. One thing before we move to Ebola, Ukraine currency has plunged to the record low ever. Looks like U.S. is having an impact. Looks like things are rocking right along like they want. With all eyes firmly focused on Ukraine's borders and the bloodshed in the east, it appears that very few people are paying attention to the ongoing collapse of the nation's currency. The hryvnia, H-R-Y-N-I-A, which is what they trade in.
That's actually Rivnia. There's a misspelling on that article. There's a V after in the middle of that word.
Uh-oh. Whose fault is this?
Whoever Hedge is.
Okay. Well, I'll get him. Yeah. Anyway. How do you pronounce it?
Hryvnia.
He's an expert on Ukrainian.
Well, I had to look it up. I actually had to go to a YouTube video last night and have somebody pronounce it for me because I couldn't figure out how to say that. I was like, that article is going to come up today, and I'm going to have to know how to pronounce that word.
You know what? I'm going to commend you. That is above and beyond. Good job.
That's my job.
Good job. The Hryvnia just traded at new record lows this morning following NATO's Rasmussen's comments. Hey, looks like we're doing our job, isn't it? And today, the stock market is a little bit on the flat side. The Dow futures are up about five points.
Yeah.
Gold is somewhere around $5 up to 1316. I knew that. You're the smart one. Anyway, so the problem with the finances there in Ukraine, now all these people are going to need more help, right? And who has the money? We have all the money here in the United States.
Oh, yeah.
Not, but we give it anyway. We can give it anyway. All right, let's move to Ebola vaccine. GlaxoSmithKline is now being celebrated by the pro-pharma press as the same company that also has a proven criminal record, by the way, of bribing physicians and knowingly distributing misleading information about the safety of their drug products. Just 2 years ago, GSK, which, by the way, was mentioned yesterday by CDC as the leader in Ebola fighting, pled guilty to felony crimes. GSK pled guilty to felony crimes in the U.S., was forced to pay a historical $3 billion fine for committing those crimes. And after paying the fine, GSK was then exempted from normal rules regarding criminal enterprise, allowing it to continue conducting business with the federal government. You see, if you commit fraud and the government catches you, you can no longer supposedly do business with the government unless you're like the Big H, Halliburton, or, you know, oil company or pharmaceutical company.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Global healthcare giant GlaxoSmithKline agreed to plead guilty, paid the $3 billion to resolve the criminal and liability suit. And anyway, so that's what they did. And a roughly 9-year federal investigation exposed GSK's, GlaxoSmithKline's, rampant abuse of the law by illegally marketing drugs, forging drug safety data, bribing doctors to promote expensive drugs, ripping off Medicare and Medicaid, that's called fraud, by the way, and lying about the effectiveness and safety of drugs. And all of this deception has generated tens of billions of dollars of profits for GSK over the years, while thousands of patients who use the drugs died.
Hmm. Wow.
All right. Now, let's move to another company that is developing Ebola vaccine. They all these companies that are developing Ebola vaccine have one thing in common.
They're all
felonies.
Evil.
Yeah, right. Evil and felonies. Felonies. A clinical trial. Now, this is according to CNBC. CNBC, like television CNBC, they're even telling you this. A clinical trial of an experimental vaccine against the deadly Ebola virus is set to start shortly. And they're going to rush it through. What did I tell you? Fast-tracking it. Mm-hmm. And they're going to say, oh, we're in such a hurry. We want to save everybody's life. So, therefore, we're going to not test it. And then if everybody dies, we'll have this little exclusive thing that says, well, we told you that we couldn't test it. So, mm-hmm. therefore,
we didn't mean for you to grow
die.
An arm out of your forehead.
Yes.
We thought we were trying to save you. Nothing
yes.
we can do.
All right. Now, if the Ebola vaccine clinical trials start in September 2014 and the vaccine is manufactured and distributed by the public by early 2015, this leaves virtually zero time for observing vaccine side effects. Or if they're giving it like they are right now, no time either. And by the way, they now say they've used up all their Ebola vaccine. And remember that there's two medical people that have been transferred to the United States, and another several missionaries that are being quarantined in the United States. Oh, thank you very much. You can't quarantine them in Africa.
Uh-uh.
And now we have the Spanish priest that just died of Ebola.
Did he pass away? That's
yes, he
news
did.
To me. Wow.
Yeah.
Man.
And all right. Now, keep in mind that the United States vaccine manufacturers have zero liability for the damage and death caused by their products. Due to a literal act of Congress, the vaccine manufacturers are able to abandon all safety testing and knowingly sell faulty, deadly products with zero risk of liability.
Wow. All safety testing.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yes. It's been set up by design for vaccine manufacturers. Whether it's your child or their child or anybody's child, too bad, so sad. There is no incentive for adequate safety testing of the Ebola vaccine. You know what their motto is? Sell, 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 mm-hmm. and get it on the market as soon as possible. So the first one to the market is going to win the race.
Well, especially if you consider the fact that if this Ebola thing or the media wants the Ebola thing to blow up a little bit more, they can make all this stuff mandatory. So that now we're going to have a vaccine that's going to be mandatory to take that has had zero safety mm-hmm. checks on it whatsoever. And if you don't take it, you could end up in a FEMA camp. I mean, that's really what potentially could happen.
And you have a problem with that?
I don't particularly care for that chain of events.
You don't like
that's
that.
Not,
no, that's
if I had
not
my druthers, that wouldn't be on the list.
That's not the way it's supposed to work. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, here, let's talk about Merck for a second here. Two Merck scientists filed a False Claims Act complaint in 2010. Okay? They were the good guys. They whistleblew on Merck. Now, False Claims Act, I know what that's all about. That's what I did for 13 years was I had a False Claims Act against a bunch of people for fraud that they did, medical people. Anyway, this False Claims Act complaint, it was filed in 2010, a complaint which has just now been unsealed. It usually has to be sealed for at least 3 months. And the vaccine manufacturer Merck knowingly falsified. Now, this is what they're saying. Now, this is a really huge deal. These two scientists that work for Merck are now saying that the vaccine manufacturer Merck knowingly falsified its mumps vaccine test data, that they spiked blood samples with animal antibodies, sold a vaccine that actually promoted and caused mumps and measles vaccine outbreaks and ripped off the government and consumers who bought the vaccine thinking it was 95% effective.
Wow.
Okay, the False Claims Act document is listed here in this piece of information. So if you want to read the entire False Claims Act, go to the Power Hour News section, and the title of the article is Vaccine to be Rushed Through with Very Little Testing. Now, when we get back from the break, I want to tell you the other things they did that were criminal that's now coming out.
I'm just glad it could never happen here. Oh, wait.
Oh, wait.
Darn it.
Oh, wait. You're here. We'll be back after this 3-minute break with the Power Hour. Stay tuned. 54 minutes after the hour. Thank you for joining us. We're going to talk about St. Louis in just a second. Did you know they actually had to close down the gallery in St. Louis? Oh, my gosh. That's huge. Mm-hmm. The gallery in St. Louis. That's like the really upscale Nordstrom et al. Place kind of thing. Anyway, let me go back to this issue regarding Merck, the Ebola vaccine. They've got to have a crisis to create a solution. Of course, we all know that. So they're creating the crisis of Ebola, trying to make everybody think, oh my gosh, you're going to die. You're going to die if you don't take this vaccine, probably. And so these two virologists, Dr. Stephen Kraling and Dr. Joan Wachowski, both former Merck virologists, said and have accused in a false claims document. Now, let me just tell you, to file a false claims document, you've got to show every bit of evidence that you have. It goes under seal for 3 months at least, and you're not allowed to even talk to anybody about this case. It is horrendous. You've got to go to Washington, D.C., which I did, to the AG's office, had to meet with the attorney general, prove my case, and when you get a false claims document filed, it's like the real deal. I mean, you don't fake a false claims document, okay? All right, so Stephen Kraling and Joan Wachowski filed this document. They're both former Merck virologists. Here's what they said. Are you ready for this? Now listen, this is serious. Merck knowingly falsified its mumps vaccine test results to fabricate a 95% efficacy rate.
Wow.
Merck knowingly falsified it. In order to do this, Merck spiked the blood test with animal antibodies in order to artificially inflate the appearance of the immune system antibodies. Merck also added animal antibodies, this is their quote, to blood samples to achieve more favorable results, though it knew that the human immune system would never produce such antibodies and that the antibodies created a laboratory testing scenario that did not in any way correspond to, correlate with, or represent real life.
Wow.
In other words, it would not provide virus neutralization in vaccinated people.
How'd they even get it through peer review? That doesn't make any sense. I mean, they must be paying everybody off.
Yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable.
Everybody in a peer review committee has a vaccine they want accepted.
Right.
So if you vote against somebody else's vaccine, they'll vote against yours.
There you go.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Merck then used falsified test results to swindle the U.S. government out of hundreds of millions of dollars for a vaccine that does not provide adequate immunization. So they sold it to the government, got millions of dollars. Merck's vaccine fraud has actually contributed to the continuation of mumps across America, causing more children to become infected with mumps. It's all about the children. Do they care? Merck used its false claims of 95% effectiveness to monopolize the vaccine market and eliminate possible competitors. The Merck vaccine fraud has been going on since the late 1990s, said the Merck virologist. Oh, man, what's the half-life of a ex-Merck virologist, I wonder,
long.
You start doing a False Claims Act. Testing of Merck's vaccine was never done against real-world mumps viruses in the wild. Instead, that results were simply falsified to achieve the desired outcome. The entire fraud took place with the knowledge, authority, and approval of Merck's senior management. Wow. Merck scientists witnessed firsthand the improper testing and data falsification in which Merck engaged to artificially inflate the vaccine efficacy findings. Now, they have to prove every single one of those things before the False Claims Act can go through. Mm-hmm. And they did. And they've done it.
And yet,
they've proven it.
No executive is sitting in jail right now.
No, nor will they ever.
That's just insane to me.
It is. It absolutely is. Now, those are the people that are going to bring you the Ebola vaccine.
Sign me up.
Yep.
I want two.
Oh.
I'm ready.
Get your bracelet over at the Power Hour or necklace. I think we've got some necklaces also that say vaccines contraindicated. That means they are not to be given to you. And I would doubt that anybody would be willing to give a vaccine with somebody wearing that. A bracelet. We don't know. Other news, St. Louis. Well, we're out of time. 1 minute, 10-second break, and we will tell you what's going on in St. Louis. And it's not good, ladies and gentlemen. Not good. We'll be back after this. 1 minute, 10-second break. JD will tell you about St. Louis. Stay tuned.